you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, this is Todd Kearns from Slash featuring Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and anything else we feel like. We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. This is the Sean Baker Orchestra with Which Way to Radioland.
Guys, welcome to another edition of Talking Metal. Todd Kearns is our guest today. Wow, a lot of great talk from Todd, so stay tuned for the interview with him in just a few minutes. He did some work with Bob Kulick recently, and he's going to tell us all about that, so definitely stay tuned for that. And I met Bob Kulick at the KISS Expo in Atlanta recently, and I was going to do an interview with him there, but it just got too crazy and it never happened. But I did get a picture with him and also got him to autograph the the Motorhead CD that he produced a few songs off of called Undercover. And yeah, I'll post that picture in today's show notes on talkingmetal.com. But today's episode is really about Todd. So without further ado, let's check out this Todd interview. And yeah, man, let's first remind you to go to patreon.com/talkingmetal. Join me there for exclusive content. And just more than anything, just to show your support for this show. It's really the best way. It's a monthly pledge. You give $2 a month. Come on, you can do $2 a month, right? $20 a month if you can. Whatever you can do is helpful. And I really, more than ever, could use your support right now. I've gone into the reasons why on previous podcasts. I won't bore you with that again here, but I need your help. So thank you for that, guys. And please keep using the Amazon links. There's also the PayPal donation thing you can do. My email is my PayPal account, strigelmark, strigelmark @gmail.com. And if not anything else, if you can't financially afford to support us, leave me a message on our hotline and I'll play it here on the podcast. I'd love to hear from you. 973-757-1917. 973-757-1917. Call the Talking Metal hotline and leave a message. Let me know what you think of this episode, or leave a song request and I'll play it on a future episode. Again, the Patreon account is patreon.com/talkingmetal. My PayPal is paypal.me/markstriegel. That's MarkStriegel. All this stuff is listed in the show notes where we have our Amazon links, which we encourage you to use, okay? Support Todd and his music. Go buy some of it on Amazon using our links on talkingmetal.com or talkingrock.net. And without further ado, here's a little Bob Kulick and Todd Kearns music, followed by my interview with Todd.
Ain't got no money. Don't own no fancy yacht. Ain't got no business. But I got you and I'm feeling like a rich man. Can't pour no champagne. Ain't got no four-star chef. Ain't got no jet plane. But I got you and I'm feeling like a rich man. Things I have, I can count on one hand. But all that matters is that I got you.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and on the line, Todd Kearns. Todd, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. And coming into the interview here, we just heard the song by Bob Kulick, Rich Man, which you were involved with, and you recently did a set with the Kulick brothers, which kind of set the internet on fire. It was, I mean, so cool. I wish I could have seen it live. So, I mean, I know you have so much other stuff going on, and I want to talk to you about all that, but because we're such crazy Kiss fans here, can we start off talking about a little bit about how you got involved with working with Bob Kulick and Bruce Kulick on this set that really kind of seemed to be the biggest news off the Kiss cruise this year, and you were the guy on bass and vocals for this great set. How did this all come about?
Well, it's a very interesting and long, history of just kind of knowing. I've known Bruce for years. Brent Fitz, the drummer for Slash featuring Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators, of which I'm a part, used to play in Union, Bruce's
right.
post-Kiss band.
Sure.
And so he's had a long history with Bruce. And, of course, I've known Brent for 20, 25 years now. I don't even know what the math is on that. And just so by osmosis, I've known Bruce as well. And I was involved. Bruce put out BK3, his solo album, about 10 years ago now.
Great
maybe
album.
9 years ago. Yep. Yeah. Maybe closer to 9 years ago anyway. And he did a CD release party, and Fitz and I both played his CD release party. He put a band together, Fitz on drums, Adam from Candlebox was on bass, I believe, and I played guitar and fronted. And we did a lot of, that sort of Hot in the Shade, Crazy Nights kind of era songs, plus the BK songs. And then Nick Simmons got up and sang a song. It was filmed for Gene's Family Jewels show. So there's an episode called, I think it's called Gene the Crocodile Hunter. I can't remember what the episode's called. But anyway, you'll see, if anybody wants to go back and dig into that, they'll see a little clip of that. So anyway, as time has gone by, and I've played with Bruce a number of times in different live situations. Somewhere along the line, I met Bob. I'm trying to think when exactly that would. I just kind of, it's funny how like just, you just seem like you've always known each other. And
right.
then, with Bob, it became a thing of, he relocated to Las Vegas. He started working, on his Skeletons in the Closet record. And yeah, he just called and took a chance on me that, he goes, look, Bruce speaks highly of you. Fitz speaks highly of you. Would you like to come down and sing on a track? And I'm like, of course, it'd be my pleasure. And in doing so, it ended up being the lead-off track, which was very exciting. And, it turned out great. I mean, I'm all really thrilled with the way that track turned out. And then from there, Bob and I and Fitz, again, were always kind of continually jamming in Las Vegas. Bob was sort of like, I would like to kind of be sort of semi-ready to, do something, in a live setting if I have to do some sort of showcase or some sort of, appearance. It would be great to have you guys, be the band, and we'll figure out how that's going to work. And so we kind of had already kind of, gotten our feet wet with each other. We'd already kind of gotten our feet wet with Bob's brother. So it's kind of like having this experience with both brothers but never together at the same time. And then the Kiss cruise came up. Both brothers were going to be appearing as guests. I think more like panel guests and kind of, that kind of thing.
Right.
I had never been on a Kiss cruise. Have you ever been on a Kiss cruise?
I have not. No, I have not been on a Kiss cruise.
Yeah. So I had not been on one. So I was kind of, I'd always wanted to. I thought that'd be really fun. So
I don't think I can afford
when
it.
When it came up,
they're kind of expensive.
Yeah, I know. I think that was kind of part of my thing is with, whether it's schedule or just being able to dig in and make the commitment to going out there for 5 days. Spending the dough is kind of a thing. But when it came up, we both, we just sort of, well, maybe we could get both brothers and play a set, you know, and sort of cover Bob's era, Bruce's era. And we really didn't cover anything, you know, there was never sort of a, should we throw in Rock and Roll All Night? You know,
right.
It just seemed like kind of a moot point to me. It just seemed like, why would we do that? We're going to do stuff that Bruce has played on and stuff that Bob has played on. And to be honest, you know, to me as a fan, I was like, dude, this is the coolest set I've ever seen. You know what I mean? Like just like as a fan seeing just stuff that's either never been played live or has not been played live in a long time, at least by the band. You know what I mean? So for us, it was kind of like, you know, it was, the set was pretty simple to put together in a funny way. Like I sort of left it to, you know, these are the Bob songs and then Bruce just, you know, there's a wider sort of variety for Bruce, but, you know, he came back with some deep cuts. I mean, we've done some weird, not weird, but you know, some deep cuts from, Revenge. Geez, I don't remember what the hell we played off the top of my head, but, you know, we managed to dig pretty deep when it comes to Bruce and, in the past, you know, getting into things from Revenge or things from Carnival of Souls and whatnot. So, you know, it just makes for when we played the show, you know, in all the, we only got together one time, to rehearse in Las Vegas.
Really?
Due to Bruce's availability. Yeah. And it was like a month before the actual show. So it was kind of like this sort of like, I don't know, like having a wedding rehearsal a month of the actual day and hope I remember all my stuff, you know. And, you know, but these, you know, these guys are all professionals and we'd all sort of done our homework and we took it pretty damn seriously and showed up. And to be honest, when we played the show, it was sort of like, I don't know that there was any final announcement that the Kulik brothers were going to be playing a set at all. It just sort of filtered out to the, into the universe that the brothers are going to be playing
with
some guys. We're not really sure. And then, we played and it was, you know, it was amazingly well received. You know, I've played in South America and places like that where the audience is singing every single word. And it was like that, you know, you know, wouldn't you like to know me off Paul's solo album as sung by a boat full of people, you know, it was very, very intense. And then, you know, and I didn't know how it would be received. You know, I just kind of assumed, like anybody, it's kind of like, look, we're all there to see Kiss. You know, we're all there to see the guys. And everything else to me sort of seems kind of like extra, I don't know, like a side dish per se.
Okay.
Even though, you know, Bruce and Bob's very deep, you know, connection to that world. You know, I just didn't know what to expect, walked off stage and I just sort of was talking to, some guys from Gene's solo band or whatever. And somebody goes, those people are waiting to talk to you. And I kind of turn around and there's this massive amount of people kind of, you know, just saying, dude, that was the, you know, the most incredible set. And I was like, oh, wow. Thank you. Cause you really, I mean, as a performer stepping outside of the, You kind of don't have any idea of how your performance goes. Your perspective is usually kind of like, sometimes, you know, you get caught up in like, I broke a string or, oh, this or that, or the monitors were weird or whatever. But, you know, I think people really, you know, there were grown men in tears in the whole thing. You know, I was like, wow, people are really taking this very seriously. And I, as I was as well, you know, like I said, from the beginning, I would never show up and not know my stuff. And you know, and those songs are a part of my DNA, as I'm sure they're part of yours and they're part of millions of other people's DNA. So to me, it was like, I'm not going to go up there and half-ass my way through Hide Your Heart or, you know, Tonight You Belong to Me. It's like, it's gotta be right. And, so we did as close as we could. Bruce and Bob are both pros. You know, when Bruce plays a solo for Tears Are Falling, it's the solo for Tears Are Falling. Like he does not, you know, he's, you know, a surgeon when it comes to how he performs. And, I just want to make sure we're as on point as him.
And you were, I mean, from the clips I saw and the people I've spoken with, which include, you know, my friend Mitch LaFon was raving about your vocals. And then of course I spoke with Eric from Kiss and he was doing the same. So you did a great job. And I, as a Kiss fan, you know, and I know Bob has hinted at this, and I just want to ask you, is there any chance, because as a Kiss fan, I want to see this in the clubs or in a theater, that you guys would go out on the road with this?
I certainly think, you know, I can only say a possibility in that we would love to do it. You know what I mean? Scheduling is always a bear to wrestle with, because Bruce is very busy with everything he has going on. Fitz and I are both busy with usually the same things together, but we all also have our own stuff as well. And it's just a matter of kind of working it out. I really think it would be a real shame not to, but you know, it's the kind of thing that it'd be a real shame to. Remember that time in 2017, we did that one thing, that one right. time. It just seems kind of weird that would happen. I honestly believe that it will rear its head in one fashion or another. So, you know, with guys like Mitch and Eric, it's been really kind of like, you know, they've been far too kind about the entire thing. And for me, it's an honor to stand there and I don't know. I would have been happy to go on the Kiss cruise, watch Kiss,
yeah,
watch Extreme, watch Steel Panther, buy some merch and go home. You know what I mean? Like that. I'm a fan. So to me, it's kind of, but to be a part of it and to be, you know, to be so, you know, for it to be so well received was, you know, was more than I could have asked for.
Awesome. Well, fingers crossed that we get to see you out on the road with the Kulik brothers at some point. That would be great. Of course, you got so much stuff going on, but I want to try to touch upon as much of it as we can. Your highest profile gig, I guess I would call it, is you know, your work with Slash and Miles. Have you guys spoken about doing more work together? I know Slash has been so tied up with Guns N' Roses this past year and a half, 2 years. Is there a future plans with him?
We are always in constant contact. You know, it's kind of one of those things where, that's another thing where I feel that it will reconvene when the time is right. And, I mean, it's always been an interesting thing because, Slash featuring Miles Kennedy and Conspirators started off as supporting Slash's solo album in 2010. You know, right. Myself and Brent Fitz both kind of came into that with this sort of, Slash had made a record with multiple vocalists, Lemmy, Iggy Pop, Chris Cornell, Kid Rock, a bunch of different voices on this one record. And Miles Kennedy happened to be one of those voices, and we all know what an immense talent he is. So, yeah, we just, you know, it's just weird how that thing kind of fell together. And how it sort of stayed together for a long time, you know, with the fact that we kicked out two albums with that lineup, Apocalyptic Love in 2012 and then World on Fire in 2014. We did great work together. And, the interesting Absolutely. Thing about that band, like, the SMKC / featuring Miles Kennedy and Conspirators, has always been sort of, you know, project oriented in a sense. Like, although it sort of was very sort of full on for pretty much 6 years, it was always sort of like Miles has always been a part of Alter Bridge. You know what I mean? And Slash has always had his own stuff going on. I actually have all my own stuff going on. Brent Fitz has things going on. Right. And it's sort of like, it's sort of a weird, like in a weird way, how this kind of like little project became, you know, it just moved to the top of that priority list. When Miles went back to do Alter Bridge in 2016, you know, it was sort of like, you know, we, as a fan, and this is me speaking as a fan of rock and roll, as big a fan as I am of Kiss and everything else, to see Guns N' Roses reform to me was, and to see it from such a close vantage point, you know, being a part of Slash's world, was very exciting, you know, and as his friend, it was sort of like, dude, you got to do that. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Just as a history of rock and roll thing, it's like, you've got to go and chase that down. And, you know, and so, you know, when it just seemed like the perfect opportunity, look, Miles is going to be doing a year or 2 years at least of Alter Bridge. So, it only makes sense that this is probably the moment to do so for Guns N' Roses. I, of course, not really being privy to the inside ways all of that works, You know, all I know is that it's sort of like something that just sort of presented itself and Slash, you know, wisely sort of, I say wisely, not, you know, just, you know, for himself or even monetarily, I think more wisely just for we, the listeners and, you know, appreciators of rock and roll. You know, I think that it's one of the last great reunions that's ever going to happen is Guns N' Roses. I mean, which is still maybe Steven, maybe Izzy someday. You never know. I guess that door's still open. But there really are very few actual reunions that I think are going to be as hugely received as the Guns N' Roses one. So to be in such close proximity to it has been pretty exciting.
The fourth biggest tour of all time, I heard it was. So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's insane. Yeah, and I saw it, like, you know, four or five times. I can't remember, just, like, along the way. And, you know, it's been really interesting for me, you know, to see it from that perspective. I never saw the original Guns N' Roses. I never saw Appetite or Use Your Illusions versions of the band. I never even saw Axl's version with DJ and Bumblefoot and those guys. Yeah. I'm like one of those guys that if there's something going on, I'm probably playing that night, so I'm going to miss it. Story of my life. It's a good problem to have. And, my whole life has kind of been like that. It's like, dude, Tom Petty played last night. You're like, damn it. You know, so a lot of artists have gone, you know, come and gone that I never even got to see live because I'm always playing or in a studio or doing something. But yeah, I'm saying that with complete confidence that at some point, you know, we're always in constant contact with Slash and Miles and everybody's kind of doing their own thing. And when the time presents itself, we'll reconvene. Miles has an amazing solo album coming out right away. Year of the Tiger, which is fantastic. What I've heard of it, Guns N' Roses is doing some summer dates. So the fact that that's going on, I mean, to me, sort of, you know, I'm kind of like, hey, call it Kulix. Let's go play some rock and roll.
Right on. And I mean, you stay busy, like you said, playing gigs all the time. You do acoustic stuff. You had a live DVD that came out rather recently, Live at the B-Side Lounge. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it's a funny thing. You know, my whole life, it's been... I'm from Canada originally. I came down to the States 11 years ago, although I've sort of been in the States my entire life playing and touring and recording and everything as well. But I was going to say a conscious effort to move to the States, but that would be a complete, it would be incorrect. It was sort of a unconscious decision to move to the States. So I kind of came down to help a band out in Vegas with some recording, some friends of mine. And just sort of, you know, fell ass backwards into a bunch of stuff. I started playing in this 20th anniversary version of Faster Pussycat with Brent Muscat.
Right.
And we went over to Europe and did a bunch of dates and then came back to Vegas and put together the Sin City Sinners. And that was a very popular Las Vegas thing for many, many years. And the Slash gig came along. But along the way in Canada, you know, I was part of a band called The Age of Electric gold-selling act with my brother. Yeah. And we just did a reunion tour last year to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the last album we ever made. The band was broken up for 17 years when we started playing shows together just in 2000. Actually, at the end of the World on Fire 2015 tour, there was a one-off Age of Electric reunion show. And then it sort of spun into a bunch of stuff during 2016. And then we released an EP and then a repackaging, 20th anniversary packaging of the album we had at the time. So we did across Canada. It's a Canadian thing. So for me, it's always amazing to go home and get to do that. So we went across Canada a couple times, I think, and then just... then I was back down here. The acoustic thing is sort of I've always been a huge, you know, I love the Neil Youngs and the Bob Dylans. And somewhere along the line, way, way back, someone said to me, hey, we're doing an acoustic night. And it was to raise some money for some charity, which escapes me at the moment. And I was like, sounds fun. Oh, I know what it was. It was they were raising money for breast cancer, and all these guys were going to be singing versions of songs by female artists, like men singing females. And I was like, oh, that sounds really cool. And I think I did like Stevie Nicks or Chrissy Hynde, or I can't imagine what I probably played, but I was like, sounds great. I'll be there, you know, acoustic guitar, standing by myself on stage. And then I hung up the phone and thought to myself, I've never done this before. It was like 20 years ago now or something. But, you know, it was something that I've always flirted with, and I've always really, really been I've always really loved. The Johnny Cash put out these records, the first one in 94 with Rick Rubin, called American Recordings. Sure. I think five in total, and they were all just him and an acoustic guitar. And to me, they really rattled me, like, in a way that it really kind of spoke to me. And people like Jeff Buckley, or his father, Tim Buckley, you know, that sort of singer-songwriter thing has been around forever. And some of the best... rock players and punk players and everybody else can sort of stand on stage with an acoustic guitar and entertain you for an hour or however long it takes. And so that's sort of something I've always entertained, that side of myself. And in 2013, I put out a record called, it was actually just between the Apocalyptic Love record and World on Fire. I put out an album called Borrowing Trouble that was largely an acoustic based record. Had an EP called Near Life Experience. And so I've sort of been cranking out solo albums for years with crowdfunding, and a lot of the crowdfunding stuff I really love, because it's so much more, cause I come from punk rock in a sense, certainly in a DIY, I was going to say DUI, which would be
quite the same. Yeah, don't want
DIY.
That, yeah.
Yeah, do-it-yourself kind of mentality from my bands back in the day, and I love this kind of connection to the audience. And so I've managed to crank out a bunch of music on my own over the years, and that's sort of how I ended up, just showing up all around, North America mostly, with an acoustic guitar. I finally did, like, just at the Viper Room in December here in Los Angeles, and that was. That was kind of a big deal for me, because that's where Johnny Cash did the 94 kind of showcase for his 94 American Recordings album. And that's kind of, it was sort of like this, serendipitous kind of like, oh, okay, well, this has all kind of come full circle to what inspired me to, has led me to here. And, it's amazing. And it was sold out, and it was fun, and it was great. And I continue to do it. I would love to go to Europe with it at some point. It's always something that I think I could do.
When you're doing these acoustic shows, I watched some clips online. Like I saw you do the Temple of the Dog song, which sounded great. How much covers do you do, and how many originals? Is it like a 50-50 split, or is it what's the set list like?
It's mostly my own material.
Okay. Right.
But I do sort of like, it's been rarely very well planned, frankly. It's sort of, you would think after all these years that I would have gotten a little bit more professional about my preparation. But I think that even with preparation, I always sort of like tried to walk on stage with the look, anything can happen here tonight. And I think, standing up there with an acoustic guitar is one step away from being a stand-up comic, as far as like you don't have drums and bass and loud guitars to fall back on. It's just you and a guitar. So if your voice cracks or... you break a string, it's sort of like you're just up there. It's basically like standing up there and pulling your pants down and just asking the world what they think, right. It's a little bit,
nothing to hide behind.
Naked, but, nothing to hide behind at all, except for your guitar. But, and I'm one of those people who's a bit of a jukebox, and I know 1,000 songs. So when people start shouting out, it can kind of get carried away. And the next thing we're playing Prince, or we're playing, Temple of Dog, like you said, stuff like that, kind of
right.
Jesus Christ Superstar. gone in like some pretty crazy directions. And that's really like the way I prefer to do things anyway, is a little bit, in different parts of my life, different things that I do, there's so much more for regiment and a set list. And this is how, and I always appreciate that. And then I like to kind of head into a world that gets a little bit more into an Eddie Kaufman, we'll see what happens kind of thing. And, and it's just you and an audience. It's sort of that turns the audience into being like the band or something. I don't know, like we're all in this together and let's just see what happens kind of thing. Cool. So that's kind of, So yeah, that's something I carry on doing.
And you do, you do the acoustic guitar stuff. Of course, you play bass in Slash's band, and then I know you're playing guitar in Toke, I believe. Well, what do you prefer, guitar or bass?
People always ask me that. It's a funny thing, because somebody once said to me, are you a bass player or a guitar player or a singer? And I always kind of just answer with musician, Like, it's kind of, even though that seems like the most douchey answer there could be, but it's sort of like, I just love music so much that if I was a better drummer, I'm sure I'd be doing drums somewhere else.
Right.
I could be like, Todd's playing drums for this band, because I just love playing so much. And I love creating, and I love being a part of stuff that it's kind of like, I'm like, that would be, it keeps me kind of sharp. And to be honest, every time I step into a gig, like we're about to do Toke, which is that's a whole other subject too, is Brent Fitz and I from Slash's band and from the Hewlett Brothers we're both Canadian, and we have this great love of old Canadian classic music. So Corey Churko, a very good friend of ours, I've known Corey for, I don't even know how long, honestly, it's probably 30 years now. We're both from the remote area in the frozen tundra. He plays with Shania Twain, and he plays with Kelly Clarkson. So the three of us kind of just started like entertaining the idea of what it would be like to record these old songs that are kind of, as a tribute and an homage to the music we loved, April Wine,
Lover Boy, right?
The ones that are kind of more Lover Boys in there. A lot of stuff that Americans or Europeans or Japanese, Australian, South Americans may not know.
You do Honeymoon Suite?
Kind of part of the
idea. Is there a Honeymoon Suite cover?
Honeymoon Suite, yeah. Yeah, that's in there. So it started off with a lot of, our love of this music. The whole intention was, there's a lot of great music that no one has ever heard because it's just such a regional thing. It'd be like, there was a band from Buffalo, New York, that we really loved that no one ever heard, it'd be like that kind of thing.
Right.
But it
right.
just happened to be like popular in Canada or popular regionally in Canada, but would never be known anywhere else. Bands like the Queen City Kids or Orphan, those kind of bands that we dug deep and said, if we're going to do this, let's include some stuff that we would like to, almost like an educational sense of like, and there's also these great songs. And that's been a really cool thing for us, because the intention was to go, look, it would be great for some person in Japan to go, I like this song, because they never would have heard that song had we not done that, So anyway, we're getting ready to do NAMM right away, coming up next weekend, I guess. And that's the big thing here in Anaheim, the big convention for all that. So we're playing a party there, and that I play guitar on, and I sing. Cool. So I'm sort of in the Paul Stanley position,
right.
Singing and playing guitar. And, that goes back to my thing of like, I never wanted to be Eddie Van Halen, because I grew up on the Ramones and Kiss, so I was kind of like, I've always loved the value of a very strong rhythm guitar. My heroes are guys like, Paul Stanley and Keith Richards and Malcolm Young. And then there's a whole other, realm of lead guitar players that, from those very same bands, that I think are my favorite guitar players. So to me, it's, I just never really kind of wanted to be a lead guitar player, even though I can get around a little bit. Paul McCartney's always been a great hero of mine, I think, as he is to a lot of people. And he bounces back and forth between bass and guitar and keys. And he's also a pretty darn good singer and songwriter. But a lot of people forget that he only became a bass player because he was the guitar player in the Beatles before Stu quit. And he said, well, I'll pick up the bass, and then sort of became a real legend on the bass guitar. So to me, it's like, it's a really different thing to be able to play bass.
Right.
Convincingly, because a lot of guitar players will pick up bass and won't quite have the right feel or whatever. But, to me, it's, it's very natural to be jamming on guitar and then just suddenly just pick up bass and whatever else. It's sort of, to me, it's kind of part of the same part of my brain.
Right on. Cool. Two quick questions.
Different
before...
parts of the same part of my brain.
Yeah, I hear you. Definitely. Two quick questions before I let you go. You performed with Hookers and Blow numerous times, still kind of in that Guns N' Roses family. Just wondering how that all came about and if you think you're going to be doing more with them.
Yeah, it's funny. I've known Dizzy for years. Dizzy, I played with long before I ever played with Slash. You know, he's been the longest standing member of Guns N' Roses other than Axl. You know, very few people kind of really think about that, but it's true.
Yep.
And he has a solo album coming out soon too, which we're all very excited to hear. We played one of the songs live. So Hookers and Blow is like his fun side project band. It's a lot of covers, a lot of Guns N' Roses. And, Alex Grossi from Quiet Riot on guitar and Johnny Kelly from Typo Negative on the drums, whose Typo was a massive influence on me. So hanging out with Johnny is just me asking lots of annoying questions about Typo. He plays right. with Danzig now. He's a legend. And,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think the world of those guys. So we did it was a New Year's Eve run. Started off as a New Year's Eve gig and then four or five shows built around that just before just before New Year's. So yeah, we just kind of been playing, and I'm sure something like that will pop up again. Chip's enough's out there right now playing bass for those guys.
Oh, is he? Okay. I didn't even know that. Cool.
Right now. Yeah, and then so, you know, I'm kind of one of those guys, like there's always a little bit of a have gone well traveled, but I also am very focused on my own, what I got going on. But, that's a distinct possibility that I could end up doing something with those guys as well.
Cool. And last question, kind of very random. On your website, you list a lot of people that you've shared the stage with, everyone from Lemmy to Adam Levine to Fergie. But the one name that kind of jumped out at me, which I had to ask you about, Bill Murray. Where did you share the stage with the great comedian Bill Murray?
We're just talking about, because it's like yesterday, Slash and I were just talking about how we had played this charity. I played it with my band, the Sin City Sinners, back in the day.
Okay.
For the great chef, Kerry Simon, who unfortunately has left us. But at the time, we were playing a benefit show for him, and all the guests were, all Slash was a guest, Sammy Hagar, Billy Duffy from The Cult, Kip Winger, I'm trying to think who, I think Alice Cooper was there. It was quite a night. It was Matt Sorum came up. It was pretty crazy. And no one really expected it, but Bill Murray showed up and basically hosted the entire night.
Wow.
And was incredibly generous and like really cool. And I was like, wow, I was pretty blown away. Like, I'm a massive, massive fan. And, he just walked right up to me and shook my hand and said, it was just a very sort of like, how you doing kind of thing. And I'm like, good, good. I said, you're going to come up and sing. And he's sort of like warming up. I just kind of laughed at that. I was like,
right.
Cause he's kind of like, if you ever see him, he'll bust out Star Wars or something like that, sing some crazy like that. But,
He
and Kerry Simon, the guy we were doing the charity for, had been roommates apparently in Chicago, like back in the 70s or something crazy like that. So I didn't really even know this history, but Bill showed up and basically just emceed the night, which was just, no one expected this. No one saw it coming. And, like I say, he was just really cool and really approachable and really just sort of there. And, that was about that. It's kind of a weird story, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's great. It's great. Legendary guy. Definitely. Did you see Saturday Night Live this past weekend? He was on.
That's how the conversation started. Cause we were just watching that clip and then,
with you and Slash.
Slash and I just started talking. Yeah. We just started, went back and forth on that. It was so funny, but, He's a legend. I mean, that's the thing. I've been very fortunate to share the stage with a lot of, you know, like Lemmy is, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, for me as a kid, I grew up on, you know, in that weird sort of world of, I grew up in a small town, so I never really had that sort of like, these people listen to heavy metal and these people listen to classic rock and these people listen to punk rock and these people listen to new wave. It was just sort of a small town and we just liked everything we liked. And it just was a sort of a real mix of everything, you know? So I really feel fortunate that I didn't grow up. Well, I later on became a lot more of a regimented punk rock thing of where you're not really supposed to be listening to things like Kiss and Led Zeppelin. But I was kind of like, I don't follow these rules. You know, I like to listen to what I want to listen to. Right. It's the same in sort of like, you know, in different, like, you can appreciate prog rock and not, and then still appreciate, I don't know, the Ramones, you know what I mean? That's sort of like the world that I lived in. And, you know, so to me, guys like Lemmy, you know, he was, you know, I don't know, like, from Olympus or something. Like, I never really expected to be in any sort of circle with the guy. And then, you know, we played with him many, many, many times with Slash and outside of that too. And, you know, you get to a point where you know the guy and then, you know, it's just a weird thing. So, you know, Alice Cooper and Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick and all of these people that I grew up on was such a fan of, you know, now are, you know, people that I shared the stage with and played with.
Awesome.
I mean, our drummer Fitz plays currently with in Gene Simmons' solo band. You know, I've been a Kiss fan my whole life and I have a Kiss pinball machine in my living room. So it's, you know, I sort of have always not necessarily avoided meeting the guys. I just sort of like, I never wanted it to be like, I'm not really a fanboy kind of guy as much as I am a fanboy kind of guy. I just don't want to. I'm a nice Canadian guy. Doesn't want to bother anybody, but, you know, I've met Paul on the road when we did some festival dates together and he was amazing, really cool. And the first time I met Gene was on this cruise, you know, and it was just sort of like in a very sort of whirlwind of Eric Singer activity. Eric's a good friend. And Gene was amazing. So, you know, I just, you know, it's really cool to be able to kind of, I never will lose that sort of, like, you know, I love rock and roll. Like, I really do. Like, to me, meeting Keith Richards or meeting Paul McCartney would be mind blowing. And I'll never really lose that kind of, and I don't think you should, you know, I never want to become like, oh, Ringo Starr's over there, whatever. You know, kind of, to me, it's like, that's a big deal, you know?
Yeah, totally, totally. And, you've really, I mean, it's amazing the people you've played with through the years. And I was trying to think now, Brent, I saw him playing with, was he playing with Derek St. Holmes? I feel like I saw him out in the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whitford St. Holmes.
Yeah. Whitford St. Holmes. That's I saw them open for Whitesnake and I was talking to Brent after the, mm-hmm. after the show. So yeah, let him know. We'd love to have Brent on Talking Metal too. He's got quite a history. It'd be great to catch up with him at some point.
I will. I'll let him know for sure.
And, Todd, thank you.
If Eric has done it, then I'm sure we'd all love to do it. Eric is, you know, we all look up to Eric, even though he's, you know, a bit smaller than I am.
Right. Yeah. Slash did it a long time ago. It's been, I think, almost 10 years at this point, but he was on about 10 years.
Oh, wow.
So we'd love to have him back too.
But oh, wow.
It's been great talking with you, Todd. Shadow in the dark. I know you're
Shadow Life, a song written by Todd Kearns / and Miles Kennedy. Again, that's off the World on Fire record by / featuring Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators. And, of course, Todd Kearns is a part of that band. Wow, he's got his hand in so much stuff. What a talented guy. What a great conversation. What a nice guy. I hope to meet you soon, Todd. And, yeah, keep us posted on everything you're up to. That's going to do it for today's episode. So thanks so much for listening, and check us out next time. Visit our site, talkingrock.net and talkingmetal.com.